F2A. Number 17B.
So can you see what he first says? He says, in other terms, he says, well, the Jews, they believed that just by inheritance, just because they were Jews, because they were just of the seed of Abraham, that they were children of God, the chosen children of God, the chosen people, therefore nothing can happen to them, they are the top class. And he says to the Gentile, you remember that you had that attitude that you didn't belong to that top class, because you didn't belong to the commonwealth of Israel, and you felt that therefore you are not of the same value, that you are not of the promise, and that you live without promise. But all that he said to them because they did not accept the Christ. So he said, remember that without accepting the Christ within you, you are not men. You are not of the God's inheritance. You are only inheriting your sonship and your manhood by accepting that you belong to the commonwealth of the Christ, so to say, and not to the commonwealth of the Jews. That you live and move and have your being in the consciousness of the Christ. Then he goes a little step further to spirit. But now, in Christ Jesus, ye who sometimes were far off are made nigh. Which says, ye were far off because you didn't belong into the commonwealth of Israel. You were far off, you were aliens, you were strangers. But now through Christ, you made it very near. You have come nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who has made both one, and has broken down the middle wall of partition between us. You hear the tone of spirit? Yeah. Through Christ is broken down the middle wall of partition. You know that spirit is the firmament, that spirit is a line of demarcation, it's a line of partition between the real and the unreal, but not between man and man. So that was a false firmament that the Jews had. They said, I make a firmament, I make a wall of partition, here are the Jews, and everything that is not Jews are Gentiles, they have not the promise, they will never be saved, unless they first be circumcised. So he broke down that wall of partition, he broke down that class mentality, that mentality which puts rich people and poor people, middle class people and the little people, and so on, in classes. He broke down that line of partition, which is a tone of spirit. We come to soul. Having abolished in his flesh the enmity, the opposition, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, he has abolished, what he says, the laws and the little laws and the little rules and the bylaws of the Jews, for to make in himself of twain one new man. He made of both, Christ made of both, the circumcised and the uncircumcised, one man, one class. He only knows one class, man, and not Gentiles and Jews. And that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby. Can you hear again the tone of soul? Oh, I didn't bring out that tone of soul when I was reading it. He was making out of twain one new man. That's typically Saul. He identified everybody, Gentiles and Jews, as the new man. He had a new definition of man. Said man is defined by God, is not defined by his ancestry, if he is from the seed of Abraham or not. And so he might reconcile both unto God, which both the uncircumcised and the circumcised, both he identified with God. He reconciled them unto God in one body, again in one interest, in one identity. He doesn't anymore accept two identities. He has broken down the middle wall of partition. Yeah? So let's go over the first three subtones. See, it has all to do now with what is man in the sense, not what is the perfect man, but what is the right consciousness of man. And he said, at the point of mind, he said, you have first to see that consciousness of man as a mind, state of mind. You have to remember what you are and what you were and what you are now, so that you can see from where you came and where the mistake was. You thought you are a stranger and that you are an alien in the commonwealth of Israel, that you are an underdog, only because you didn't accept the Christ. The moment you accepted the Christ, you were no more just a stranger. How on earth can we get rid of that duality? Through spirit, by breaking down the sense of duality, by breaking down really that middle wall of partition, just to have one class and not many classes of men. So we begin to realize that we have to see that no matter if we are poor or rich, if we are man or woman, if we are free or bond, slaves or master, if we are black or white or yellow, whatever we are, there is one body, one man, the new man. And so he identified that new man as that which is identified with God, reconciled with God into one body. Touch of principle comes in and came and preached peace unto you, which were afar off, and to them that were nigh. So you hear again that once, what is the new subject? It was taught, it preached. Principle is always that which preaches, which interprets, which explains. So that Christ came through the medium of Paul to teach them the new doctrine, to teach them that they are not outcasts, that they are not aliens. Then the touch of life. For through him we both have access by the one Spirit unto the Father. Can you hear the tone of life? To have access to the Father, to life. So he says, through him, through that Christ Spirit that was taught to you and you were enlightened by it, you had now access to the Father. They thought they had no access to the Father because only the Jews had access to the Father. So the Gentiles could see that they too can go to the source of life. Then comes 19, a tone of truth in it. So we are truth as truth. There must be a very strong sense now here. Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostle and prophet Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Can you hear that strong sense now of man? Huh? Everything that up to this point just seemed to have a preparatory stage, preparing the consciousness to accept now as truth as truth, that we are no more strangers, no more foreigners, that we are now fellow citizens, that we are now with the saints, that we are now in the household of God, and that we have now built up on the true foundation, namely on the foundation of Christ, which is the cornerstone. To hear the whole Christ consciousness being shown here. As if all the first five subtones They're only there to build up in consciousness and put away all the opposition in our consciousness that we would not be able to accept the Christ consciousness. So when all through the first five subtones all was put out of the way and cleared away, then we can accept really that truth as truth, our true manhood, to be fellow citizens with the saints. Yeah. And finally, we have a tone of love in it, in whom all the building fitly framed together. Terrific how he could see that. In whom, in that Christ, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Lord. And actually, he has that allegory that the body is the church, is the temple of the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation of God through the Spirit. So he gives a whole sense here of really the spiritual dwelling of God as a structure. It is so, or as a gestalt, you could also say, where he shows again in whom all the building fitly framed together. Now this is really structure, and everything is fitly related to each other in order to form a temple, in order to form a holy temple of the Lord, in order to form the gestalt of man, the structure of the Christ idea. How is it? Until we come, how is that rendering? Until we come to the measure and stature, to the measure and stature of the fullness of Christ. Huh? That gives the sense here. Huh? That's also from Paul. He somehow, I always feel, he was the first one to see structuralism. He was the first one to show that all things hinge together. He's very strong on that, that there is one body. In that one body, everything is related together. That the hand must have the feet, and the eye must have the ear, and the ear must have I don't know what, that every organ in the body needs the other organ. If you take out one organ of the body, the whole body falls to pieces, destroyed. And so it is with the temple fitly built together, taking out one pillar, and the temple falls to pieces. And so he wants to show it, that's also true with consciousness. With a consciousness of truth, which is man, if we only take out one thing, it's no more the compound idea man. And it's no more man, it's already then a mortal. And that is what he brings out over and over in his epistles, that wonderful sense of structure. That an idea is structured. That an idea is not just a clumsy unit, so to say, an amorphous element, that everything has within itself a structure. Naturally, with that idea, we work today very much. All the sciences today are now built on structuralism and no more on atomistic ideas. They see that if you cut a blade of grass, that you shake the universe, something like that is the Chinese proverb, showing that nothing happens in the one being that does not affect the whole of it. And that brings us naturally to a completely different world view. We begin to realize that the world is dependent on every one of our acts, or of every one of our thoughts, or of every one of our line of reasoning and consciousness. That is not isolated, what we think. That it is always showing that wonderful thing, that the power of an idea is always the power of the infinite one. Power of an idea is not just the power of an isolated idea somewhere at work, An idea is always the idea of mind. Therefore, always an idea of the infinite. So if we touch an idea, we always touch the infinite. And that's the new consciousness that we tried to build up over the last 10, 20 years, and which is the foundation of our future too, that we begin to consider Christian Science as a science that must be understood in structure, as a structure. So that and only in this way we come out of metaphysics. As long as we think that an idea has power, that an idea has power or has law, well, if we leave it at that, then we are metaphysicians, because we consider then an idea as something that is completely isolated from the infinite one. And as long as we think that way, I think that's just... We contemplate an idea and that has just its effect on a very limited realm. We are metaphysicians. We are not scientists. Science says science is the contemplation of the infinite one, and what the infinite one contemplates are ideas. Not me contemplating an idea. That's not science. That's metaphysics. But when the infinite one contemplates ideas, that's science, including metaphysics. So he touches on that here when he says, now what is that consciousness of the Christ? What does it mean to be fellow citizens with the saints in the household of God? It means that the power of an idea is the power of the infinite one. That the substance of an idea, it's not just a little substance, it's always the substance of the infinite one. The balance of an idea is always the balance of the infinite one. See? That the government of an idea must always be the government of the infinite one. So if we have a right idea about government, it's only then right if that is brought back to the government of principle. Only then is it the government of the infinite one. So that our life is only then an idea when it is the life of the infinite life, capital L. And with that thought, naturally we can see that we are really... jointly fit together in that infinite life, that there is only one life, no life before birth, no life after birth, no life before death, no life after death. There is just one thing, life. Therefore, in the way as we are thinking about life, we always must think about that life is eternal, that life is infinite. So that... The dominion of an idea is always the dominion of the infinite truth, of the infinite one, and not just the dominion of an idea correcting an illusion. That everybody can do, that mathematicians can do too. They too can take a truth and correct an error with that truth. They can do that too, but that's not being. In being we must see that an idea, a fact, is always a fact of the infinite one. That one truth. And if we bring it back to the infinite one truth, then we know that is a fact in the whole universe of being. And only in that way we can see why we are a world factor, why our true consciousness is a world factor and not just something that has its effect on us individually, with which we solve individual problems. Only in that way we can see that. Or when we see that... Really, the plan of love is the plan of the infinite one, that the plan of an idea is the plan of the infinite one. So that when the moment we see that there is such a thing as plan, that we see, but that plan is the plan of the infinite one, and in that way we know that we can partake in the planning of the universe. We become now an active factor in the planning of the universe if we go out from science and not from metaphysics. so that the universe is not going to run the way the universe wants to run. It's going to run the way our consciousness is one with the infinite one that is love. We really come to that point where we gain mastery, where we gain dominion over the world. And I think that's what we will see more and more in the next 1,000-year period, that man has dominion, just as the days of creation tell us, but always through the infinite one, not through metaphysics, not through right thinking, through good thinking, through positive thinking. So then I always feel that's what he somehow wanted to bring out, in whom all the building, all that is built up, that the whole gestalt of the universe, that whole plane of the universe is fitly framed together and groweth unto an holy temple in the Lord. It grows, we can see an evolution. So that today the idea of evolution is in the forefront and says, how can we guide evolution? How can we steer evolution? Do we have it in our hands to steer evolution? Yes, we have it, because we can see that if we go out from the whole plane of love, that we are building, really, jointly fit together a universe that is dominated by the plane of the whole. And so, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation of God through the Spirit. It's an habitation of God, of the Infinite One. It's not an habitation of man. It's an habitation of the Infinite One. You see, we read these things, habitation of God, yes, habitation of God, and have a religious, nice feeling about it. But we don't draw the conclusions. Why is it an habitation of God when we build man? Then it should be a habitation of man. That's metaphysics. But if we build it through the Infinite One, then we inhabit really the inhabitation of God, the One Spirit. And so, I just here and there I want to point out how big really this teaching in the epistles is, but that it doesn't really mean anything until we see it in its structure. Yes. Well, there is no more time to start another subject. That would be a pity. And out of every pity, we make something good and say to ourselves, now, what have we seen? I said a method really to get the spirit of the letter is to go over the same thing time again, just feeling our consciousness. One of the little rules that one always should apply is this, that now we have had three subjects. And that the moment we have more than one subject, two and three and more, then it's a good rule to say, now can I see the very clear difference between the subject of principle and the subject of life? And is that very clearly distinct and different than the subject of truth? And ask that. Ask for distinction. Because spirit does that. It diversifies. Diversification is a means of understanding. And understanding is a means for demonstration. So when we ask for differentiation, we really ask for a better understanding and for better demonstration. So one has to go and say, now, can I really see that these three subjects are very different? The first subject was, as we have seen in the unfoldment of spirit, just the question. Now, what is the nature of man's perfection and received through the fullness of Christ? And it just is building up a perfect concept of man. That's something. then comes in life a completely different attitude, which says, what are the gifts that are given unto men, to that perfect man? And so he answers through the seventh subtone, all the gifts that are given by grace unto men. Then we come to the next one and ask ourselves, now is the third subject of truth different? And we said, yes, it is. It answers, how does the establishment of the compound idea man take shape? How does that happen? What are the sevenfold development so that we feel we are a compound idea man, that we are a temple, that we are a structure fitly joined together? What makes that compound idea man? And then the answers are always a bit different through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Yeah. So in the last one, when we ask now, what makes a compound idea man? He says, well, you know, you can't see that if you can't see first and remember first from where you came, that you were a mortal and that you named yourself a mortal, that you named yourself not a citizen of the world or of the commonwealth of God, but you have been made now man. Through what? By seeing that that the wall of partition is broken down, that there is no class distinction, that there is only one body. That one body is in soul always identified with God. The moment we identify ourselves with God, we identify the new man. And so the new man comes into existence. And through the subtone of principle, we see that that new man is really, can be interpreted to everyone. At that point, we begin to see something about the compound idea man, that it can be interpreted to everyone, not only that it does not only apply to a specific group of people, and that therefore everyone has access to the Father, to the whole, to the fullness of the whole, and so thereby, therefore, making him partaker of that God, of that Father. And so he becomes also the child of promise, becomes also fellow citizen of the household of God. What kind of man is he then if he takes everything from God? Then he is a compound idea. Then he embraces everything, so that every part is fitly together in one building. And you get the sense that man is a structured idea. And from there he can go on to love, to the main tone of love, which then shows that when we have accepted that then we can partake of the plan of salvation. Yes.